welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tak, jiao weevi, va cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, now broadcasting for over 13 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network, CBS, and Clear Channel radio stations, now nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, and we are heard live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com, where programs are archived, and you can also click donate to help support our program. Really be nice to be back on WCPT in Chicago, where we were heard in our Air America days. It's just about the only progressive radio station left in America, commercial progressive, with the recent format switch at WWRL in my hometown of Nueva York. WCPT would cost us $200 per hour or $400 per week to be on the air. All right, we'll just put that on the wish list right now, along with Go Vegan Radio, looking for a tax-deductible donation of a reliable vehicle, high MPGs preferred, from economy car to a van. And you can email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. I know maybe we need Kickstarter campaigns for all of these to help finance WCPT, help finance the World Vegan Summit and Expo. By the way, there is a link at goveganradio.com to the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register right now for this revolutionary event coming to the L.A. area March 20th through 22nd at the Marina del Rey Marriott. This is where we will recognize that our most important animal advocacy is to convince people to go vegan. I wasn't at the recent so-called animal rights conference in L.A. I think I'm banned from it. I'm certainly banned from speaking at it because my last talk there was a few years back. I was officially condemned for exposing too much truth, I do believe. Well, if I ever were invited back to speak, as if, my talk would be, "I told you so." And then that would be, condemned and banned also. So, I'm working on organizing the World Vegan Summit and Expo, mainly to attend the conference where I'm not banned, at least not yet. And there's still time, but okay. Hey, but I know superficially everything was hunky-dory at the ARCon. Of course, anything called Animal Rights Conference will attract the most caring, wonderful people in the world, right? And it's an event, it's a party, it's a reason to gather, for the camaraderie with other activists and the FBI and the meat industry. So, as I mentioned, the World Vegan Summit and Expo is about veganism. I'm just wondering, since I wasn't there, what vegan campaigns and strategies were put forth at this just past so-called Animal Rights Conference. I don't know. Would you tell me? Please email me. The email address, bob@goveganradio.com. I'm interested. I'm curious. Because I have a big problem with what the conference organizer, FARM, and the main groups featured there do. I accuse FARM of not being able to distinguish animal killers from animal advocates at this point, and I have come to see these organizations as self-appointed regulators of approved animal suffering, you know, and I, you know, the truth of that matter is, you know, why do I do that, huh? Well, a good example of what I mean by characterizing groups such as HSUS Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary Compassion Over Killing, ASPCA, and Farm, etc., as self-appointed regulators of acceptable animal suffering. A good example is the Egg Products Inspection Act proposed by the United Egg Producers, for which all of these groups actually campaigned. Therefore, 67 square inches of crammed battery cage space per imprisoned bird are acceptable suffering to all of these groups who represent the animal rights movement, who also endorsed toxic ammonia levels that routinely cause severe respiratory, immune system, and eye problems. Because of support for the egg bill, forced starvation molting can now be considered acceptable suffering to these groups, therefore humane. They also agree that a 16-year waiting period for the implementation of the insertion of, quote, adequate environmental enrichments into the battery cages is acceptable suffering, as it will probably take 16 years to determine what anybody really means by adequate environmental enrichments. Nobody knows, so, you know. Then eventually, perhaps the hens can finally have those enriched furnished cages that were previously condemned by all of these groups before campaigning for them. So, I mean, if your animal rights groups, if your animal rights organization believes that a space 8.2 inches by 8.2 inches in a stacked battery cage in a dark, suffocating concentration camp filled with the screams of hens, you know, of tens of thousands of innocent, mutilated death row victims, that's acceptable, huh? That's acceptable to an animal rights organization? Well, again, remind me why you consider that to be an animal rights organization. I mean, I would only believe this to be a credible AR conference if there were workshops to undo the massive damage to animals caused by these groups. I mean, it would only be a credible conference if its leading groups asked, you know, what do we do about us? Right? And anyway, I'm vegan for 30 years. I talking about this, I'm still amazed. People still eat chicken? I mean, that also kind of shocks me, you know. What parent in his or her right mind in 2014 still feeds the filthy, fecal-covered, pathogen-laden, decomposing body parts of mutilated murder victims? You know, I mean, you know, what parent would feed that to children when, you know, when the packaging comes with a warning label about the contamination that contact with these dead birds brings to countertops, cutting boards, knives, sinks, you know, careful what it touches, except it's okay for your children, you know, your children's lips to touch it, huh? It's okay for your children to swallow it, but not okay to touch your countertop. Now, once again, we have a recall of filthy Foster Farms chicken body parts that the USDA categorizes as a high health risk. That's in the words of the USDA. Did you hear that? High health risk, okay, for the chicken there. So, you know, it's like, oh, mommy, what's for dinner, huh? Oh, sweetheart, how about a plate of high health risk, huh? And this is an ongoing saga for filthy Foster Farms. Perhaps it just should have a permanent recall of its products, right? You know, caution, use of this product as recommended puts your family at high health risk. Anyway, just a few days ago, the USDA in a news release updated on July 12th, alerted the public to possible Salmonella Heidelberg contamination of Foster Farms' so-called chicken products. Why don't all bird lovers object to birds being, you know, turned into products? Huh? You love birds, but you still eat products made of them. Living beings aren't really products, are they? They have feelings and emotions. They suffer pain. They have two eyes just like you. You know, to see the immense torture that chicken eaters finance. You know, they also have digestive tracts and bowel movements, or to be more precise, cloaca movements. You know, perfect conditions for contamination. So the Foster Farms Livingston, California concentration camp is forced to recall, quote, an undetermined amount of chicken products that may be contaminated with a particular strain of Salmonella Heidelberg, end quote. The USDA says the Foster Farms chicken is associated with a specific illness. The recall applies to so-called fresh, as if, right? Fresh? Okay, fresh, LOL. And frozen chicken products sold with the Foster Farms label and private label brand names shipped to stores, among others, including Costco, Safeway, Kroger, Food Max, and distribution centers in California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii. Ooh, how many innocent birds have to, you know, have to have their throats slashed to be distributed in so many places, huh? Well, now people can get sick in all those places, you know, and this is an ongoing outbreak. You should know that. The Centers for Disease Control has connected human salmonella illness in California specifically to some Foster Farms boneless, skinless chicken breast products. Someone's breast is a product. Hey, did you hear that New York City cannibal cop has been released? His first request upon his release was, you know, he wanted a boneless, skinless breast, you know, and all species considered really didn't matter to him, you know. I mean, that guy brought new meaning to, you know, to protect and to serve. Ah, okay. I see we are just about running out of time in this segment. Coming up on today's program, we'll talk to Amanda Benham in Australia, author and nutrition expert on raising vegan children. Next hour, animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Twitter, it's at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And there are also a couple of Bob Linden pages there. On Facebook, before the break, we were talking about the filth, the contamination that eating chicken, you know, is basically, you know, the Centers for Disease Control having connected human salmonella illness in California specifically with Foster Farms boneless, skinless chicken breast products, as if a being could be a product, but okay. I mean, imagine really being Could you imagine being marketed? Your sole purpose on earth. You were born. You were raised, fattened up, just to be killed, so someone can put your breast in his mouth. Okay, and that person could really get sick from it. Like fever, abdominal cramps, diarrhea. We're talking about salmonella here. Diarrhea symptoms sometimes so severe that people do have to be hospitalized, and older adults and children and people with compromised immune systems are more likely to develop severe illness. And the product subject to recall, by the way, the Foster Farms chicken body part products bear the establishment number P6137, P6137A, and P7632 inside the USDA mark of inspection. So here we have all of this potentially contaminated so-called food, all with a mark of inspection. By the way, in addition to the ongoing Foster Farms outbreak, there is a multi-state outbreak of human salmonella linked to so-called live poultry in backyard flocks. The Centers for Disease Control warns, quote, contact with live poultry and their environment can be a source of human salmonella infections. Live poultry can be carrying salmonella bacteria but appear healthy and clean and show no sign of illness, end quote. So your neighbors with the backyard birds there, community health risk. And if your municipality thinks that's okay, well, maybe your city can provide you with a hazmat suit for when you walk the dog through the neighborhood. Warnings also apply to mail order hatcheries and feed stores that sell or display live poultry. The Centers for Disease Control warns that children under 5, the elderly, and people with compromised immune systems should never touch chicks, ducklings, or other live poultry. And you should see all the recommendations related to, what and where you have to clean and wash and avoid. Backyard poultry can make, just most of your home just a hazardous waste dump, basically. Also appetizing, don't you think? Really. And then what I really resent is how animal waste and animal agriculture can contaminate produce. How they're always blaming the tomatoes or the peppers or the onions or whatever, Fruits and vegetables don't have a digestive tract. They don't create E. coli. Animals do. Animals have that fecal matter. We also hear about E. coli contamination now of raw clover sprouts produced by Evergreen Fresh Sprouts of Idaho. And, what animal waste has now led to a recall of organic sprouted chia powder and seeds. Recalled are products from Oriya, O-R-I-Y-A, Organics, Superfood Protein Medley. Check your cupboard there. Superfood Protein Medley from Navitas Naturals, organic sprouted chia powder and Omega Blend Sprouted Smoothie Mix. Williams Sonoma Omega-3 Smoothie Mixer. Recall products from Health Matters America include Organic Traditions Sprouted Chia Seed Powder, Organic Traditions Sprouted Chia and Flaxseed Powder, and Organic Traditions Ultimate Superfood Trail Mix. This is all animal-based contamination of our vegan foods, and I resent it. Also recalled, Green Smoothie Girl Sprouted Ground Tri-Omega Superfood Silver Pouch and Green Smoothie Girl Sprouted Ground Tri-Omega Superfood Gold Pouch. Really a shame. I don't know. Need to go vegan. We need to eat veganic. We'll have veganic produce at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Okay, Amanda Benham coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. Please like us there. Be our friends. Also, go to worldvegansummit.com. You can register there right now for this amazing event coming up in March in Southern California. And thanks to everyone who helped with the original financing so we could secure the Marina del Rey Marriott. Beautiful location for us to gather and plan to change the world for the better. My thanks to Vegetarian House Vegan Restaurant in San Jose, Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street, who got the ball rolling for us. Great food there. Check out the menu, vegetarianhouse.us, one of the finest vegan restaurants in all the world, organic, vegan, non-GMO, many raw options. And if you have need for catering in the San Francisco Bay Area, a business event, social event, you have a wedding coming up, Vegetarian House can cater and make it a very special event. Again, go to vegetarianhouse.us. And of course, we want the world to go vegan. We want children to go vegan. And today we are going to talk to Amanda Benham in Australia just about the subject of raising vegan children. She is an Australian accredited practicing dietitian, and she's published a scientific paper on planning vegan diets and is the author of a recent book called Greenalicious. So welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today, Amanda?
I'm great, thanks, Bob. How are you?
Terrific. So you're there in Australia, Monday morning.
That's so, right, yes.
Yeah. How long ago did you go vegan yourself, and why?
I went vegan in 1983. I'd always liked animals, and I actually studied veterinary science for a while, and found that quite traumatizing. So I dropped out of that and was sort of lost for a couple of years. I was under the impression that it was essential and like a necessary evil for humans to eat and use animals, because that's what they'd jumped into us at uni back then at university. And then one day I met a woman who was a vegan, and I didn't really know what that was, and I asked her, and I sort of said, well, can you do that? And she said yes. So I became a vegan at that moment. I guess I was a pre-vegan, just ready to go vegan. Never looked back.
Right. Well, that's great. And you're vegan 1 year longer than I am. I'm 1984. You said 1983 for you, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. And you have two children?
I do, yes. I have a daughter, Kamina. She's 26. And a son, Toby, he's just turning 24. They were raised vegan, of course, and they've been vegan all their lives.
Wow, they are so lucky. Do they know how lucky they are? Do they?
You know, they do say that they're lucky. My daughter wrote a chapter in a book called Vegans Are Cool about growing up vegan, and she actually wrote in that she was incredibly grateful that she was brought up that way, because she felt that it was consistent with what as a child she naturally believed, which was that we shouldn't harm others. So, yes, they are grateful. They do appreciate it, I think.
So they've made it to 24 and 26, so we know you can live at least that long as a vegan, and you're vegan 31 years, I'm vegan 30 years. Did you have any concerns then when you might have been pregnant way back then? Were people saying to you, what do you think? That's crazy what you're thinking about raising vegan children. Like, how did you approach it?
Look, I did cop a bit of flack. That's actually one of the reasons I started to study nutrition, was because, when you get asked it, every day of your life, where do you get your protein? I really wanted to give the right answers, especially then when having children. I wanted to make sure I was doing the right thing by the kids, because it was considered to be a wacky, dangerous thing to do. I remember one time I was pregnant, a woman was screaming at me that my child would be born with brain damage. which wasn't very pleasant to have that happen. But I had studied up on nutrition, so I knew that, you know, I was doing the right thing nutritionally. So it was really,
run through your list of degrees here. I see you have a number of degrees in nutrition and dietetics. What degrees?
Well, I'd already done a science degree in physiology and biochemistry by the time I became interested in nutrition. So then I, while I was pregnant, I did a graduate diploma in human nutrition, and then to actually become a practicing dietitian, I did what we have a graduate diploma of nutrition and dietetics. And then I did my master's in health science, majoring in nutrition and dietetics. And for that, I wrote a thesis on vegan and vegetarian nutrition on the adequacy of the diet and the health benefits.
Okay. And, tell us about what you learned then. I mean, people were saying, you know, you're crazy. You're not going to put decomposing body parts and animal secretions down your children.
Yes.
You're crazy, right?
It's bizarre to think back, but people did think that I was crazy. That's one of the reasons that I kept studying and decided to research it even more. What I really hated was back then we had the five food groups, which I'd learned, you know, as a child in what we call primary school here, you know, when I was about 10 years old. And of those five groups, of course, one of them was called meat and one was called milk. So it was giving children the impression that, these foods were essential for human health. And that I knew that that wasn't true. So I ended up writing a scientific paper on planning adequate vegan and vegetarian diets, showing that, you know, by using alternatives to meat and to milk, whether that be, you know, soy milk and things like legumes and lentils and all the rest of it, that we could meet our nutritional requirements. And fortunately now, we now have what's called the Australian Guide to Healthy Eating. And I know you've got something similar over there. I had a look at it this morning. But there is no longer a meat group. It's actually called meat, poultry, fish, eggs, tofu, nuts, seeds, legumes and beans. So, and the milk group is no longer called the milk group. It's called the milk and alternatives group. So I guess back
It would be a healthier list if some of those were missing, like the meat, dairy, fish, and eggs.
I'd love to see some of them missing, yes. But at least we're no longer telling kids at school that these foods are essential. And I think that's really important because I remember one time my son came home from school and he said, oh, the teacher said I was going to die. And I said, well, everyone's going to die, but what are you going to die from? And he said, oh, because I don't drink cow's milk. So I sort of said, oh, I think you're okay, son.
Right.
And he knew he was okay, that's what he was told.
It's funny, when I decided to change my diet, I was engaged to a butcher's daughter, and my future ex-mother-in-law was yelling at me saying, you know, you're going to die if you eat like that. And I thought, well, yeah, I am going to die, I guess, but now maybe a lot, you know, further into the future, you know? I mean, I might be adding years onto my life, you know? So what were some of your findings? What told you that all of this was good? Oh, and I guess, do you, in Australia also, do they ask you the first thing, like, where do you get your protein? Is that always the first?
Yes, believe it or not, we still get that question. As vegans, I find it incredible, but it just shows how effective the brainwashing has been of the powerful meat and dairy lobby to, you know, lead people to believe that those are the only foods that contain protein. And obviously vegans are going to be terribly deficient and fall over and die. So, we still hear that. What I learned, of course, the first thing is you and I both know that there's no need to consume any animal body parts or secretions or anything else to be healthy. And secondly, in fact, that we can be a lot healthier by not consuming these things. So, you know, you would be aware of the research showing that vegans are less likely to become obese or get diabetes or cardiovascular diseases and bowel cancer, things like that. So, you know, it's incredible to think that yes, people were screaming at me that I was doing a terrible thing by my children, when in fact it's probably the people that are feeding their children the meat and dairy products that need to be questioned. I mean, obviously they're ignorant, but is that the best diet for anybody? And clearly it isn't.
So if someone were coming to you saying, okay, I think you're right. I would like my children to be vegan. You know, where would you start? How would you plan meals? What are some of the meals you plan? And, what have worked well? How did you get your kids to eat their leafy greens?
Well, I think that not giving your kids junk from an early age really works. So I can remember my children, I think you have the same thing. You have a supermarket trolley and you can set the small child up in the front and wheel them around. And I don't know if you do that over there, but we do that here. And then you put all your food and everything in the trolley. And I can clearly remember both of my children at different times would grab like a head of broccoli or something and start eating it while they were actually sitting there in the supermarket trolley. And they'd never had lollies or anything and had no desire to, for them a treat was a delicious juicy mango or something like that. I think we have to remember that our tastes are acquired, and we're training our taste buds every day that we eat. We're training them to eat, foods that are wholesome and good, or we're training them to eat foods that are not good for us or junk foods. So I just was aware I was training my children to eat well, and to this day, they don't really want they might have an occasional, fries or something, but really they love their veggies and their fruit and everything else, which is, really good to see. So I just made, whole food vegan meals, not a lot of fat used, but, a lot of lentils and beans and things, tofu, tempeh, TVP sometimes. I mean, there just wasn't back then the range of meat alternatives that we have now with all the different burgers and everything. So I just make up my own burger patties and, put lots of salad in a bun. I mean, really there's nothing so weird about vegan food. It's, as you would know, most food actually is vegan.
It's actually the only thing that's food is vegan food, really, when you come right down
to
it.
Well, that's right, yes. But, even what most people consider to be food, they'll say, I don't like vegan food. Well, that's just obviously the most ridiculous thing you could say, because everybody likes fruit and vegetables and grains and nuts and things like that. So,
hang on. We're talking to Amanda Benham. We have to take a break. She's a practicing dietitian in Australia. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. The website, goveganradio.com. Register now at worldvegansummit.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are talking to Amanda Benham. She is an accredited practicing dietitian. We are talking to her. She is in the future. Where she is, it is Monday morning. Where I am, it is Sunday afternoon. She is in Australia. Brisbane? Do I pronounce that right? Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. Brisbane, that's right.
Brisbane.
Yes.
Okay. I'll quit while I'm ahead. My New York accent didn't vary the pronunciation there. Good. Amanda, you have a lot of formal training in nutrition. I'm just wondering if in that training wasn't a lot of it. I mean, you wanted to be, vegan, and wanted to know everything about veganism that you could, but wasn't a lot of what was presented to you in your formal training really pushing meat and dairy?
Well, it was just an assumption that that's what people ate, so that's what we would learn about. But basic nutrition is that humans need certain nutrients, and they get them from things that we can eat, and that's what nutrition is all about. But our body doesn't really know where or care where we get those nutrients from, in that vitamin C or whatever is vitamin C, no matter where it comes from as far as the body's concerned. So Yes, there was an assumption that we would be learning about that. But when we had to do meal plans as part of our hospital training, I was told I did have to do non-vegan ones. So I always did a vegan alternative to show that whatever type of diet it was that I needed to plan, whether it was, you know, low protein, high protein, low sodium, weight loss, diabetic, whatever, that it could be done in a vegan version. So the training was valuable, really.
Right. Well, sometimes I think here in the U.S., there's undue influence put on the American Dietetic Association, or the, you know, there's the whole, you know, meat industry, American Medical Association. So nobody lets the truth come really blaring out, you know. So, there you are planning vegan meals as alternatives in the hospital when everybody in the hospital is there because of, you know, what they're getting served, right? So, you know,
pretty much. Look, yeah, it's just paradoxical, isn't it, when you think about it? But I guess, you know, it's just very slow for the message to get out there. And certainly there are undue influences. I certainly get lots of glossy brochures sent to me as a dietitian, printed by the meat industry or the dairy industry, always, you know, promoting their products, but done in a way as if it's purely educational, which, of course, you know, there's education, isn't there? And some of it's just pure marketing.
Yeah, propaganda. We're talking to Amanda Benham, and she's been vegan 31 years and has raised two children who are now 26 and 24 years of age, lifelong vegans. They are so lucky. Wouldn't it be great that, you know, like, I just find it amazing. I wish it were I. And you have written a book, Greenalicious. Tell us a bit about your book.
Well, I actually got approached to write that book. I didn't sort of wake up one day and think, yes, I'm going to write a book about green vegetables. But that's in fact what it is. I was approached to write it. So I've co-authored that with a chef who I haven't actually met. Her name's Lee Drew. She did the recipes, and chapter by chapter, that green vegetables are categorised into whether they're flowers or leaves or whatever they are. And I'd researched all about green vegetables, the benefits of them, what their nutrients they're rich in, how to store them, how to cook them, that type of thing. So that book's coming out in October. As far as I know, it's the first cookbook dedicated exclusively to green vegetables, which I think is actually a really great thing. And it's totally vegan. The people involved, the editor and the chef and myself, are all vegan. So it will be a vegan green vegetable cookbook.
Ah, wonderful. Well, remind us when it comes out, and we'll have to let everybody know at the time. And
yes, thank you.
Did you also, I think you mentioned that you may have written another book, but under a pseudonym? Is that?
Yes, I have. Now, I was actually hoping that you might. I call her my identical twin sister, my long-lost identical twin sister.
Amanda, we'll have to wait and hear about it after the break. We'll continue with Amanda Benham, our accredited practicing dietitian, talking to us from Brisbane, Australia. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. And you can register for the summit at worldvegansummit.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we've expanded to 2 hours since we began national syndication through the Genesis Communications Network. If you didn't think we had something to say before, well, double that amount. And you know, now that you hear, you know, so much more of the program, you know there is no reason, you know, to avoid going vegan. There's really no excuse. Really, wherever you are in the USA, you can have delicious, nutritious vegan meals delivered right to your door, right to your home, right to your office from Greenlight Meals, greenlightmeals.com, greenlightmeals.com. And just check out the menu at the website. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, smoothies, desserts, just all looks so delicious. It looks so healthy. The kids will love what Greenlight Meals has to offer. Greenlight Meals also offers nutritional and weight loss consultation. And so just check out the website. It's greenlightmeals.com, greenlightmeals.com, and delivered right to your door. No excuse, okay? And you can say hi to the folks from Greenlight Meals at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming to the Marina Del Rey Marriott March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015. Register now. We'd love to see you there. Go to the website. Check out the sample menu that we have there. Look at the list of speakers we have, the activities. It's great. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the sample menu. Amanda Benham, our Australian-accredited practicing dietitian guest today. I don't know if you've visited that website, but the chef looks like he's going to do amazing things for this vegan gathering. And we're going to have produce that's actually veganically grown, which is a step beyond organic, because organic still allows animal products in the growing. This will be all vegan. You know, we'll have a lot of veganic produce there and an amazing menu. So something a practicing dietitian could really appreciate, I'm sure.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Before the break, we were talking about, you have an upcoming book called Greenalicious. You started telling us about another book, perhaps written under a pseudonym or nom de plume.
Yes. So Anna Bean has written a book called We're Vegan, and it's a children's book, and basically it explains in simple terms what a vegan is.
Could you help our audience a little bit? Help explain in simple terms, please. What would you be saying in there in simple terms?
The book is rhyming, and one of the pages says, animals are not ours to use in any way that we may choose. And I think that sums it up. Mm-hmm. For me, it does anyway, that being vegan is about not interfering with the lives of others, human or non-human animals. I think that's pretty simple. And I think a lot of people get confused. They think veganism might be a fad diet, or they're not really sure what it is. But I've tried to put it in terms of it's about respecting others and not interfering with their lives, right. Which, of course, means not eating them or using them for any of our own purposes.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're amen to that. And that's, you know, big reason why we're putting a conference together in March to recognize that we don't feel that animals should be used for any purpose, food, clothing, experimentation, entertainment, and we don't want the issues clouded with, you know, humane meat or local grass-fed and all of that. Are those trends in Australia now too, so that people who know that they should go vegan maybe get a rationalization that suddenly there's higher welfare, humane, free range?
Yes, it's very frustrating. People say, but I only eat free range eggs. So what the marketing is doing is helping people to feel comfortable about animal exploitation by making it sound like it's all very nice, that the animals have a lovely life and happily line up to be slaughtered when their useful life is over, which, of course, we know is complete nonsense. Yes, they're not necessarily getting the vegan message, they're getting some watered-down thing of, if you care about animals, you can have humane, happy meat, which, you know, obviously is an oxymoron.
All a scam. So was there anything else you wanted to mention? We have maybe a minute or two left. Anything you wanted to mention or related to nutrition or Anything we didn't address that you wanted to, or how people might contact you or not contact you?
I'm happy to be contacted. I have a website, www.humanherbivore.com. That's got some nutrition information on there, planning a vegan diet for people of all different ages, through pregnancy, children, whatever. I think there's a lot of really good resources out there now, and I think that, you know, as vegans, it's important that we just keep providing these resources and help and encourage people to go vegan. And when you asked me about my children, I didn't get to mention that illness is not something that they've ever been familiar with. So they grew up very, very healthy. And, you know, I think that it's important to recognise that what we eat has a huge impact on our health, and of course the health of the planet and the lives of others. So obviously it's just go vegan all the way for myself and my family.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, and that's wonderful. So, two healthy children. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So, all along the way, throughout childhood, they were healthy vegans, right?
Definitely. And my daughter is somebody that would be very happy to talk about it if in future you would like to talk to a lifelong vegan.
I love talking to lifelong vegans, of course. Yeah. What were some of the... I'm sorry, go ahead. You're saying?
I'm sure she'd be willing to do that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. And what were some of their favorite foods growing up?
What were their favorite foods? Gee, I think that I was famous for making cakes with vegetables in them. I found it impossible to make a cake without putting vegetables in because I wanted to make it healthy. And they laugh at my cakes now, but now my daughter, who loves to make cakes, has a tendency to put vegetables in cakes too. So,
I love that. You know, it's funny. I mean, I sometimes talk about like vegan recipes mainly being what falls over in the refrigerator becomes a recipe. So if ketchup falls on, you know, broccoli, or if you know, chocolate falls on broccoli, suddenly chocolate broccoli would be, you know, it's like, how do we get kids to eat broccoli? Chocolate broccoli. But you put
I've
vegetables.
I've actually made ice cream, chocolate ice cream with broccoli in it, and I've called it Chocobrock. And I give it to people, and they can't tell that there's broccoli in there. So the thing with vegetables, some people find green vegetables a little bit bitter in taste. It's a genetic variation in our taste buds. And you can overcome that by sweetening the vegetables. So that's just a little hint. You know, that's why you can put spinach into a smoothie with fruit, and you don't really taste a spinach taste. I love a spinach taste, but some people don't. So that's one way to get your kids to have more greens.
So what would one of those, what were the cakes like? So what could it be? What the ingredients, or, you know, a chocolate broccoli cake? Well, or like, what might they be?
You can actually puree broccoli and put it in a cake. You can put pumpkin in a cake, obviously carrot, beetroot. Just about any vegetable goes in a cake.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of cakes were they? Like,
look, chocolate has to be my favorite, really.
So you were pudding. Yeah. Okay, good. So I had to get that, you know, because I love chocolate too. So now I will have another excuse to eat chocolate, to get my vegetables. Good idea. So, all right. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today, Amanda Benham in Brisbane, Australia. And we'll look for your book coming out in October, Greenalicious. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Bob.
Okay, sure. My pleasure. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And which I did want to try to start talking about this last week because, people did seem to be, enjoying the July 6th archive of goveganradio.com. And the discussion of abolition and slavery with Professor Gerald Horn of the University of Houston. Now, of course, slavery is an ingredient in any animal-based product, food, clothing, experimentation, entertainment, and the workers in those industries often find themselves in slave conditions. And that has become quite apparent in the slavery of humans that you finance if you eat shrimp. I started again to, I to talk about this last week, The Guardian reported on the high cost of cheap shrimp, Thailand is the world's largest shrimp supplier. CP Foods, Thailand's largest shrimp farmer, Jill Richardson was writing in The Guardian saying, she said, "You may think slavery ended with Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, but it is still around. Disturbingly, there are even cases of modern-day slavery found in the United States, including farm workers in Florida chained and locked inside of U-Haul-style trucks, forced to work in the fields for as little as $20 per week. But here in the United States, when we catch cases like that, we send the perpetrators to jail. Strangely enough, slavery only became illegal everywhere when Mauritania became the last country to outlaw it in 1981. Worse yet, Mauritania didn't criminalize slavery until 2007. In Thailand, slavery is illegal, plain and simple. It just happens anyway, a lot. The majority of the estimated 500,000 victims are migrants from poorer nations like Burma. They pay brokers to help them find jobs in Thailand, and instead, the brokers sell them to fishing boats as slaves. Once on the boats, the slaves are held without pay. I will continue this after the break on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden and the high cost of cheap shrimp. It's human slavery. And the website's goveganradio.com. Please make a tax-deductible donation. Click donate. Goveganradio.com. On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We're live Sundays 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com, where the programs are archived, and you can make a tax deductible donation by clicking donate. Having a wonderful weekend. It was great seeing my good friend Arlo Taves from Viva La Vegan Grocery hanging out in the Bay Area. We went to Loving Hut in San Francisco, which, yummy, just fantastic. So that's a lot of fun. He tells me they're up to 10,000 vegan items at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga. 10,000 vegan items. There's also a Viva La Vegan Grocery in Santa Monica. Not quite up to 10,000 items there, considering, you know, the space is a little smaller, but 10,000. Wow. It would be fun to explore all, through all of that, right? Many of those are from Nature's Flavors at Viva La Vegan. Wonderful vegan products from a vegan company. You know, Selecti, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, you know, Selecti. You'll also find Birdie and Bill's natural sodas there, and baking mixes. You can find vegan, sugar-free, gluten-free, a lot of wonderful cooking products from Nature's Flavors. You can go to naturesflavors.com. And at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, we will be drinking organic coffee from Nature's Flavors. We'll have Select organic coffee and Select tea served to us there at that wonderful event, where Professor Gary Francione will make a number of presentations. We were talking about slavery in the shrimp industry before the break. And as I was mentioning, so you have up to 500,000 people, migrants from poorer nations than Thailand, mainly Burma, paying brokers to help them find jobs in Thailand. And instead, the brokers sell them to fishing boats as slaves. Slavery, 2014, financed by shrimp eaters. So once on the boats, I'm quoting here from The Guardian. Once on the boats, the slaves are held without pay, forced to work up to 20 hours per day. Those who have escaped describe regular beatings, torture, and even witnessing the murder of other slaves. But these boats don't catch shrimp. They catch other fish and sea creatures, fish that aren't economically valuable as human food. They sell their catch to factories that grind them into fish meal. From there, the fish meal goes to CP Foods, which feeds it to farmed shrimp. It takes about 1.4 pounds of fish meal to produce 1 pound of shrimp. Oh, that's efficient use of the seas. Then it says here, the shrimp, by the way, are often farmed in unspeakably disgusting and environmentally harmful conditions, as if slavery alone isn't enough of a reason to avoid imported farm shrimp. How about killing innocent creatures? That's enough of a reason to avoid buying shrimp, huh? Then it says, from CP Foods, the shrimp makes its way to major American retailers like Walmart and Costco. Shrimp is America's number one seafood. In fact, we, or you, or they, eat far more shrimp than any other two favorites, who are captured and killed from the ocean, that meaning tuna and salmon. One of the reasons for eating shrimp would be the cost. So cheap. Why? Because of slave labor. So that's what's behind it right now. Now you have the story behind that. You're supporting slavery if you're eating shrimp. Okay. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And I do want to point you toward the website, worldvegansummit.com. Just wonderful speakers lined up there. You know, it's going to be a really educational and moving event. And all right, here we go. There's the music once again. All right, we have Professor Gary Francione coming up. And again, I suggest you go to worldvegansummit.com, check it out, and register right there on the spot. A lot of meals included, registration programs. You'll love it, okay? Worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and the Bob Linden pages hiding therein. I do want to thank Sentient Lifestyle for its support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo and helping us get things rolling so we could secure the venue. And you know, we still have a way to go, and we look to finance the event with your registration, which you can do right now at worldvegansummit.com. And if you go to goveganradio.com, you can click on the banner for Sentient Lifestyle, see what they're about, also sentientlifestyle.com. Yes, we do have the need for a gathering to get together and talk about, you know, like really effective, enthusiastic ways of animal advocacy, because I see at the recent so-called animal rights conference, the main groups there, if I would have paid attention to what they were telling me to do, I would have been campaigning for 67 square inches of space per chicken as my animal rights campaign. So I don't know if that was a good place to really learn to promote veganism. I presume, you know, maybe the Vegan Society of the UK will have some good advice on how to promote veganism enthusiastically. But let me ask Professor Gary Francione if he might have some observations on that. He's the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. He's at Rutgers University. And his latest book with Anna Charlton is Eat Like You Care. And I don't know, would I be getting good support on my vegan activism if I were in touch with the UK Vegan Society, Professor Francione?
No, unfortunately, Bob, the UK Vegan Society has gone the way of all the new welfarist animal charities that are promoting happy exploitation and flexitarian lifestyles, or whatever you want to call them. And funny you should mention the Vegan Society, because that is something I wanted to talk about this very evening. So yesterday, someone sends me a YouTube clip of Fiona Oakes, who is a marathon runner, apparently a very good one, very accomplished one. And it's an interview that she did a couple of weeks ago on BBC Radio. So I thought, well, this should be, now she's an ambassador for the Vegan Society. So that their group of sort of celebrity types that have a connection with the Vegan Society in the UK. And so I got this clip and I listened to it. 3 minutes into it, 3 minutes. I mean, it's like it's a long interview. 3 minutes into it, she says she's a vegan, and she basically says, I'm a vegan. I've been a vegan since I've been six, but I realize it's not, veganism is not for everyone, and not probably for very many people. And then she goes on to say, but she's tired of hearing that, you can't achieve physical things if you're a vegan. You'll be physically weak or whatever, and because her physical performance indicates that's simply not true. But I was shocked. I went back and I listened again, and she said, veganism is not for everyone, and not probably for very many people. And I was actually stunned.
Does she want to keep it to herself? I don't understand. What is she trying to keep it to herself? Spread it around?
I listened. Then I listened to more of the interview, trying to see if I misunderstood something. And sure enough, I didn't. And so I posted something, and got the same reaction I get whenever I do that sort of thing. Is I get these people. Oh, she's wonderful. I don't know the person. I don't know her. I'm sure she is wonderful. But that's not the point. The point is, when you're on BBC Radio and you've got all those people listening to you to say veganism is not for everyone and not probably for very many people, when you are an ambassador for the Vegan Society. Now, of course, the Vegan Society, as we've talked about the past couple weeks, has basically rejected the idea of veganism as a moral baseline, has adopted a flexitarian approach, and basically has this rebrand in which it says to people, you don't have to be vegan to love vegan lipstick or vegan trainers or vegan, ice cream or whatever. It's nonsense. It's like, if you consume some vegan products, as everybody does, since nobody on the planet eats nothing but animal products, everybody consumes some plant foods sometime. So, this idea that, you can be a vegan if you consume some vegan items. And the answer is, so what? Everybody does that. That doesn't really move the ball forward. It doesn't really change thinking. It doesn't do anything to move us away from the notion of animals as property and toward the notion of animals as non-human persons. And so, I listened to this. I was really upset. As I said, I posted something on Facebook, and I got the predictable reaction. And it really heated up during the day. It had a lot of people coming over, including some apparently friends, you know, supporters and personal friends of hers coming onto my page and making comments and telling me how I don't understand. And I said, no, I understand perfectly well. You're on BBC. You've got this opportunity to really educate people about veganism. And what do you say? You say veganism isn't for everyone. And then I get the lectures. Well, you don't understand. No, no, I do understand. I have been on plenty of media, including the BBC, including BBC Radio, over the years. And then apparently there was a fairly, we had several thousand people participating in this and viewing this and getting involved, and the discussion got a little heated. And this morning, Fiona Oakes issues a statement in which she basically says, it's a long statement, you can find it on my Facebook page and on my website, abolitionistapproach.com. It's a long statement, the thrust of which is, I don't want to come across, and this is a quote from, I mean, she uses the expression, you know, I don't want to come across, or I don't want to portray this as we appear as fundamentalist nutters if we promote veganism. Basically what she's saying is that the two choices are between, you either sell it out and say veganism isn't for everyone and not probably for very many people, or you act as a dictator, that's a word she uses, you act as a radical, you act as a fundamentalist. I really hate that word fundamentalist. It really is. It's a very charged word. And a lot of these new welfarist people and these flexitarian people and these basically, I'm not going to say that veganism is a moral baseline people, accuse those of us who think that veganism is a moral imperative of being fundamentalist. This was actually an issue that I discussed in writing in my book, The Animal Rights Debate, with Professor Robert Garner, because he used that expression, and I went back and forth on that because I made the point that I thought it was really terrible that people use that expression with the charge that it has these days. But in any event,
what do you think they're meaning by that? You know, in a sense, it is the most fundamental thing to be vegan.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, They're using it as
a religious kind of a
fundamentalist in the sense of, you know,
religious extremist, religious extremist,
Christian fundamentalist, and that expression is really never used in anything but a pejorative way, and it was really upsetting to me. And what concerns me about this way of thinking, this what Fiona Oakes is doing, and I was insulted. I was really insulted by her statement. This idea that, well, the choice is, I either dictate or I tell people what to do, or I come across as a radical, or I come across as a fundamentalist nutter, or I sell it all away. And I think that's nonsense. And, you know, it really would have been great if Fiona Oakes, when she was asked by the BBC guy about her veganism, said, you know, it's not radical. It's not radical at all. Think about it, everybody. Think about why we get upset when we read about Michael Vick fighting dogs, or why in the United Kingdom did we all get upset? There was a case a couple years ago, Bob, a woman named Mary Bale took a cat and shoved the cat into a trash bin. She didn't kill the cat, but the cat obviously was not happy. And, she put the cat in a trash bin, and it was captured on CCTV, which if you watch any British crime dramas, you know, like, you know, the entire island of Britain is covered by, like, millions and millions of CCTV cameras. And, she was caught on closed-circuit television throwing this cat, and the reaction was horrible. People were upset. It was like Michael Vick. It was like the level of hatred that was directed towards Mary Bale for what she did to this poor cat was similar to the sort of hatred that you see about Michael, you know, that you see directed towards Michael Vick. And so why couldn't Fiona Oakes say, look, there's nothing radical about veganism. If anything, what's radical is, we all believe that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering on animals, yet we all know that we don't have to eat animal products to be optimally healthy. So what's really radical, what's really extreme, is that we all believe, what we already believe as a culture should lead us in the direction of veganism. And the fact that it doesn't, that's what's really sort of strange and radical and bizarre. There's nothing radical about saying, yeah, we think it's wrong to beat up on animals. We all think that. And so, you know, and you don't need, it's a no-brainer. If you don't need to eat animals, then you're just beating up on them for palate pleasure when you consume them as food. Mm-hmm. And so, what troubles me greatly is this idea that that if we're going to present a strong case for veganism, we can't present a strong case for veganism, because to present a strong case is to dictate, to be a dictator, to tell people what to do, to be an extremist, to be a radical, to be a fundamentalist. And I think that that's nonsense. I find that insulting. And I see that as being very harmful to veganism. Then what's really interesting, get the quote here. Then the guy who is the manager of VegFest UK, a guy named Tim Barford, he chimes in and basically says, I respect the views of those who disagree with Fiona. No, he doesn't. He's saying that. And understand the frustration with the comment, but like this, referring to her saying that veganism is for everyone. But to insult her, disrespect her publicly, and pay no regard for her achievements? Well, I mean, disrespect her publicly. I'm disagreeing with her. I disagree with her. I don't like to be called fundamentalist. I don't like to be called those sorts of things. I don't like something that I think of as a moral imperative, denigrated in the way that Fiona Oakes chose to denigrate it.
Okay, Professor Francione, we have to take our break. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden with Professor Gary Francione. Remember, you can register now at worldvegansummit.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and you have a couple of Bob Linden pages there if you want to see things in duplicate and triplicate. And it is our weekly animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. His website, abolitionistapproach.com. So, what I learned before the break, and, you know, I'm learning, you know, my vegan activism. I've been making my signs for my demonstration and working on my chants. So what I learned before the break, of a few of my new chants and signs, I think, Professor Francione, if I'm getting this right. First, veganism is not for everyone. Veganism is not for everyone. Okay, so that'll be one. Then veganism is not probably for very many people. Veganism is not probably... That's not a good chant either. Yeah. Let's try. No radical fundamentalist morality. No... I don't know. I'm not liking the way this is going. Next, you'll probably tell me that somebody said, you know, go vegan, it'll probably make you sick.
Well, yes, Bob. Funny you should say that. So Tim Barford, who is the manager, I mean, this, you know, VegFest UK, which is a fairly big deal, this guy is the manager of VegFest UK. And he defends Oakes. She has done so much more than the rest of us put together to help people go vegan. Yes, by telling people that veganism isn't for everyone, they'll go vegan. Sadly, it is true that, now this is from Tim Barford. I'm looking at the quote. Sadly, it is true that many people don't get on well with a vegan diet and get very ill on it. Not an ethical justification, obviously, but a plain statement of fact. With supporters of veganism like that, you don't need enemies. You don't need a meat industry saying that veganism is bad. You don't need a dairy industry and an egg industry saying that veganism is bad. We've got the people supposedly on our side. We've got Fiona Oakes, ambassador for the Vegan Society, saying veganism isn't for everyone and not probably for very many people. We've got Tim Barford, manager at the VegFest UK, saying veganism, it'll make you sick. You'll get ill. Very ill, actually.
I'd like to see his studies. I want to see the studies he's quoting on this one.
There are no studies. Bob, there are no studies. Governments which lie to us all the time have had to acknowledge that veganism is perfectly healthy. And indeed, many of the studies show that it's healthier. Indeed, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But you don't have to even buy into the idea that veganism, a vegan diet, is healthier for you. It certainly is as healthy as a diet of rotting flesh, cow mucus, and other, you know, products. It's certainly as healthy, which means all of the suffering and death that we're inflicting is unnecessary. And you know what? What I want us to commit to do, as you know, I would love it, Bob. I would love it if you would reach out to Fiona Oaks and ask her to come on at next week or whenever you can accommodate it. And I would love to debate with her. I would love to discuss these issues with her. I would love to ask her, why, when you're on BBC, don't you take advantage of that marvelous opportunity and say, there's nothing radical about veganism. If anything, what's radical is we inflict suffering and death on 58 billion land animals a year and a trillion sea animals. And we purport to be animal lovers. We purport to reject the idea that animals are things. We purport to accept the idea that animals have moral value. We purport to accept that animals are members of the moral community. And what's really extreme is, despite what we say we believe, we support this massive, unimaginably hideous slaughter of sentient beings. And the best justification we have is, they taste good. I like the taste. That's extreme. That's radical. That's really, really sick. And you know what? You don't have to get on BBC and tell everybody, you must go vegan. I dictate that you go vegan. What you say is, look, what is it that we believe as a culture? And how can we reconcile what we say we believe with what we do? And the answer is, we can't. And if you're going to tell me that that's dictating to somebody, I'm going to say, nonsense. If you're going to tell me that the choices between selling out veganism and saying it isn't for everyone and not probably for very many people and it'll get you sick, if the choice is between that, you know, I mean, you're not going to tell me that's the choice. That's the only choice we have, because anything else is fundamental, is being a fundamental nutter. That's crazy. That's
okay,
crazy.
We're out of time. I will extend an invitation to Fiona Oaks for next week. Thanks for listening. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com.